change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes and see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder. Better keep your guard up. Cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Pod Skiwiwi. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, live and in person for the first time ever.
It's different.
History in the making.
Yes,
looking at your face while we do this. It's definitely...
I know. It's very frightening. But
yeah, I'm going to look the other way.
Yeah, you might as well.
We don't normally
It's Grey Cup week, baby. And we're talking Ticats.
We are talking Ticats. And before we get into that ugliness, we got some news to announce. We got a new theme song.
Yes, a new rap theme song from who's the artist there?
Kendall
Josh?
Untamed. So here's what happened: he is a friend of Don Unamba's, and I guess Unamba put the call out, and he put the song out, and it's a banger, and we're gonna use it at the top of every episode from now on because it goes hard. What do you think of the song?
I think it's pretty good. You know, it has some good flow, and you know, we were replacing our old tune, which I believe was Black and Yellow. By whoever, but it's nice to have an official...
Wiz Khalifa, whoever.
Wow.
You know who he is.
I don't know anything. But it's nice to have an official Ticats song as our theme song. Shout out to him for recording it and letting us use it.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. All right, let's get to the game, Mike. I mean, do we have to actually talk about this? Because, man, it was disappointing.
Yeah, it's kind of going to bring me down, you know?
Yeah, so obviously the Ticats lost and lost in... big fashion, 46-27 in the Eastern Final to the Ottawa Red Blacks. And now those Red Blacks will go on to the Grey Cup to face the Calgary Stampeders. And our Ticats, a season filled with such promise, ends with a whimper instead of a bang. Mike, where did it all go wrong?
In this game in particular, you know, it from the very start, it was troubling. I remember watching them. They were throwing a lot of blitzes at the Ottawa offense, and Trevor Harris was reading that like the pro that he is. He had a tremendous game. Got to give credit where it's due. He read those blitzes like a baller, and he got rid of the ball quickly. I don't think we got to him once the whole game. So I think that's where it started to really, you know, the downward spiral began with all those blitz recognitions.
Yeah, we're going to talk about all the crappy things from the Ticats, but we do have to give a shout-out to Trevor Harris. He was... fantastic in that game. Yeah. CFL record 6 touchdowns in a playoff game. I believe he had, what, 3 incompletions? You got the stats right there in front of you. Why don't you check me to make sure I'm right? Don't look like a slap dick here. But I think he only had 3 incompletions the entire game.
He was 29 for 32, 367 yards. It's 90% completions. I mean, the guy was on fire.
He was.
If he plays like that in the Grey Cup, they're going to win it for sure. And now that's going to be a tougher task than against Calgary's defense. But, yes, credit where credit's due. Trevor Harris was phenomenal.
Yeah, that's probably the best I've ever seen him play. So let's get to the Ticats stuff of this. And we got to start with our MOP candidate quarterback. Jeremiah Mazzoli did not play well in this game. I think that's fair to say. His numbers at the end of it are decent-ish. Yards, 300-something. Completion percentage in the 60s. You got the numbers in front of you.
Yeah, he was 28 of 41. 315 yards, 68.3 completion percentage. Those interceptions really hurt us, especially the two. The one at the end, near the end of the game, you know, we were out of it, but those two early led to 2 touchdowns, and that was killer for us.
Well, like, you look at those numbers, you take away the 3 interceptions, and which is what everyone wanted to do this week when talking about Jeremiah Mazzoli. Well, if you take away his running abilities, well, then him and Trevor Harris are the same quarterback, and we're not going to get into the Harris Mazzoli debate here because, well, it would be kind of foolish after what we saw on Sunday. But you can't take things away. And you look at Mazzoli's numbers and they're decent, but then you look at those picks, 3 interceptions. And like you said, the two the killers, because on the very next play after both those picks, Ottawa finds the end zone. And later in the game, near the end of the half, the Red Blacks kind of let the Cats back into it with some boneheadedness of their own that we'll talk about in a bit. But this one was pretty much over at halftime.
Yeah, it really was not Mazzoli's best game. He kind of shrunk in this game. You know, the Ottawa is obviously the better team, but those two interceptions, I mean, the one was really bad. He was supposed to go deep. He was going deep for someone. I don't know if it was a miscommunication between the receiver and the quarterback, but that ball was severely underthrown, and they took it back to, like, the 10-yard line. And Ottawa took advantage of, you know, their opportunities, and that's why they won the game.
Yeah, full credit to the Red Blacks in this one, which pains me to say, as we all know. I'm no fan of the Ottawa Red Blacks, but full marks to them for this win. They absolutely 100% deserved it. Defensively, Mike, it wasn't there.
No.
The defense got no pressure. The line got – every time they sent a blitz, like you mentioned earlier, Trevor Harris found an open man. And when the line's not getting pressure, or when they do get pressure and the backs aren't manned up or whatever it is, you know what I mean? Like, it was pitch and catch out there. It was like Trevor Harris was playing against air.
Yeah, it was ugly. He was obviously highly motivated. He's heard the critics, just I'm sure like Mazzoli has. But, yeah, it looked pretty damn easy for him. The secondary was terrible, but it's hard to cover all day when you're getting no pressure either. I believe they had no sacks in this game. They had basically no pressure, even though they were blitzing a lot more than they usually do. Ottawa had a game plan, and it worked to perfection.
And did it feel to you like they were playing a lot more zone in this one as opposed to their typical man-to-man? Because on the 6-touchdown pass in particular, I recall, Greg Ellingson is wide open in the middle of the field, and there's no one near him.
Yeah.
Like, there's no one within 5 yards of him, and then he just turns it up and he's gone.
Yeah, they must have, because they must have looked at the tape and said in the previous 3 games and thought, okay, this man-to-man stuff isn't working against this team. Maybe we'll switch it up, which, you know, I don't have a problem with. I thought they switched it up a bit against BC the previous week, and it worked tremendously. But obviously Ottawa expected that, and I don't know what else to say. They just tore this defense apart. It was like, you know, a CFL team playing a high school football team. It was ugly out there, Josh.
Yeah, it was just disappointing watching the game. We had some friends over at the house. We were hoping, because after last week, or the previous week, I mean.
We need to stop getting so excited after wins, Josh. You know what I mean? Like, God, need to temper our expectations.
I would rather be excited and be disappointed afterwards than be negative.
Yeah.
And
we look like idiots.
Well, is that anything new? Don't we always look like idiots?
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
I think we had reason to be excited about this one. Look, you win by 40 points and then you get beat by 19. Like, that's kind of the tale of this season for this team. They look like world beaters 1 week and then can't get out of their own way the next. That was the inconsistency. That's why they were a 500-ish team. They are what they were. And we saw games where they looked like they could not be stopped. We saw games where they made comebacks. We saw games where they looked like the best team in the league. And we can use injuries as an excuse all we want, but the other team playing the Grey Cup on Sunday, Calgary Stampeders, dealt with the same types of injuries, and they kept rolling.
Yeah.
It's just a disappointing end to what felt like could have been a promising season to start the year.
Yeah, I expected the Ticats to be in the Grey Cup this year. I don't know why. I just thought that they would be in there, we'd be watching them. And it's even more disappointing than previous years, because we're at the Grey Cup,
yeah,
and we wanted to watch our team play. I've never seen them play live in a Grey Cup. You've never seen them play live in a Grey Cup, and you just have more attachment to the game. Obviously, you're more excited about the game if your team's in it. And maybe next year,
indeed. The thing with this team this year and the promise they had, and look, I'll say this. I would much rather have this sitting here talking to you right now about losing ugly in the East Final than what we did last year, where we spent the last 3 weeks of the season essentially spinning our wheels talking about glorified preseason games. Mm-hmm. So
true.
As much as it hurt, as much as it sucked on Sunday, I will take that every single year over years where this team starts 0-8 and is out of the playoffs before we even hit Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's kind of miserable getting together to talk about a team that
sucks,
you know? Yeah. So this team didn't suck. They were mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
They, all season long, they never really beat a high-quality team. And maybe we should have looked at that and said, hey, you know, yes, we beat BC in the previous week, but we haven't beat Ottawa. We haven't beat Calgary. We haven't beat Saskatchewan. We beat Winnipeg. But, like, you know, we haven't beat a real contender all season long. And it showed.
Yeah, it definitely showed. Let's go positive right now. And we've discussed the ugly. There's not a ton to be positive about in this game, mm-hmm. dude, but Braylon Addison spent the last 3 weeks emerging as a star and as one of the few players, and we'll get into this a little bit later, that's actually returning next year, that we know is returning next year. Him in this game, 12 catches, I think he had 129 yards. He was phenomenal. He has been phenomenal the last 3 weeks. If there's any positives to come out of losing Chris Williams, losing Jalen Saunders, losing Brandon Banks, it's the emergence of Braylon Addison. He was great in this game. He's been great since he got into the starting lineup. 3 straight 100-yard games, including 2 in the playoffs. It sucks. I can't emphasize that enough. But he was a bright spot in this game for the Ticats. And he was a bright spot at the end of the year in games that meant something, in games that didn't mean something. And I'm really excited to see what he can do in this offense next season.
Yeah, you got to think he's going to be a starter, especially with all those free agents at receiver. I mean, pretty much all of them. We'll get into that in a bit, but you got to think that this guy isn't another Brian Timms. Like, I think he's shown more than Timms did at the end of the season 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2016.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a 2016 playoff game against Edmonton.
Right.
He played the week before.
Right. Yeah. So I think Addison's the real deal. I think you think that as well. But you're right. If those injuries didn't happen, we never would have got a chance to see him, and maybe he gets picked up because he's on the practice roster or something. So, yeah, it's exciting to have a new potential star receiver in the lineup.
Other thing about this game that I liked, Frankie Williams on returns. We've spent almost all season waiting for a return man.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Williams had a punt return, I believe it was, for a touchdown earlier in the year. But late in this season, and even in this game, put together some really good returns and nearly broke a couple.
Yeah.
Broke one, if I'm not mistaken, in beat. Yeah, he did. He had a touchdown.
That was called back.
That was called back.
On a questionable
penalty. So, again, another thing where, yeah, we're kind of trying, we're fishing here, I think. Mm-hmm. We're throwing the challenge flag to get an illegal contact
yes.
a couple of years ago, you know what I mean? We're really digging deep to find some things to be positive about in this game. But I think the emergence of Frankie Williams, another player who will be back next year, he is signed for next season, can play some DB. We saw him in a pinch play in both these playoff games. But in the return game, I think this team has a guy, not a Brandon Banks caliber returner, because Brandon Banks is up there amongst the all-time greats, as far as I'm concerned, as a returner.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy that can flip field position, which was a problem for this team this season.
Yeah.
If this is something that we can see consistently next year, maybe this offense has more success, even than it did this year, which it was a very successful offense. If they're 15 yards extra downfield, that's less field to cover.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But Frankie Williams in this game, and I think in the latter half of the season, really stepped up. And it's nice to see that we will have a return game next year.
Hopefully. Yeah, he was great. I mean, we had great field position all game long. It seemed like we started at the 40-yard line, the 50-yard line each time. And every time he had a good return, I was like, okay, well, maybe we're starting here good. Maybe we can, use this momentum and turn this game around. But it just never happened. But Frankie Williams got a ton of speed, and I'm excited to see what he can do next year in the return game, because it's nice to have a guy back there that you expect big things from every time he touches the ball.
Now we got to talk about the last thing from this game that I think we can say is a net positive. Mike Jones?
Who?
Mike Jones!
Oh, Mikey. Yes.
What a touchdown catch.
Yeah, that was tremendous. He just keeps getting better and better and better. Mike Jones gets the thumbs up from me overall in this season, actually. You know, we talked about it many times. He started slow. He had some problems. But now he's rounding out to be a top end Canadian receiver, a top end receiver, period. So Mike Jones, yeah, he had that tremendous catch. He bobbled it a bit in the end zone. He came up with it, which he had to at that point in the game. I mean, it was the last play of the if they didn't get that, we were in serious trouble. We were obviously in serious trouble anyways, but that was encouraging going into the half. We're now we're down by two touchdowns. It's doable. It's a comeback. It's a possibility. But yeah, big thumbs up to Mike Jones.
Yeah, it gave me, watching that game, hope that, okay, they're down by two scores. If the defense don't get to stop, they get the ball back to score again. Okay, game on.
Mm-hmm.
Ottawa marks down the field to start the second half and score a touchdown. And it's like, okay, so this is just, that was a momentary blip.
Yeah.
To give us some false sense of security. And yeah, nothing came of it. But you're right, Mike Jones, and man, where we were at the start of the season, even during midseason, it was that Edmonton game here in Hamilton, or I say here in Hamilton because that's what I'm used to saying. I'm in Edmonton right now. Mm-hmm. It was the Edmonton game in Hamilton where the ball hit him off the face. There was the one time he lost it in the sun or in the lights. He had his Mike Jones moments, but they were few and far between this year. And a friend of mine pointed that out to me when we were watching the game. It's like those were really the only two big miscues. Yeah, he had a couple drops, but you know what?
Luke Tasker
had drops this year. There was one game, I don't remember who it was, Tasker dropped three or four balls, which is not normal for him. Mike Jones has turned into, and I will say this and I will go on the record, he's the second best Canadian receiver in the CFL. It's Brad Sinopoli, and then it's Mike Jones, and then it's everybody else.
Yeah, there's not a ton of Canadian top-end quality receivers right now. I mean, I can't even think of any, really, but yeah, Mike Jones, he has the speed. He is, you know, he has the hands now, it seems. He catches pretty much everything now. So this guy, I mean, you look at the numbers for this season, I believe he was around 800 yards.
He was over 800 yards.
Yeah, so this guy's a potential to be a 1,000-yard receiver year in and year out, and he's still very young. I think we need to lock this guy up.
Yeah, he's at the end of his contract, and we'll get into the free agents, like I said, a little bit later. But no, he really – he picked the best season possible to have a breakout year, right? Mm-hmm. Goes over 800 yards receiving, becomes a reliable target, and he's slated to hit free agency. So as a Canadian, he's gonna cash in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I hope the Ticats pay him. He's not in that Andy Fantuz category where
– not yet.
And he's not in the Brad Sinopoli category either, but you're right. He's got 1,000-yard potential. He's got go-to guy potential. They moved him around in the offense. He wasn't just – the wide side. Oh, we got to throw a Canadian out at receiver. Mm-hmm. Let's throw him on the wide side and hope it all works out. And he's another guy too, who I think it bears mentioning, stepped up because of injuries. Not only to all those guys we talked about during the regular season, Shamont Chambers was the starting Canadian receiver for this team. He gets hurt in training camp. Mike Jones gets thrust into that role and he excelled. Kind of made, and it's a shame because, man, What could have Shamont Chambers done in this offense?
Yeah, he looked good last year in the offense. So, yeah, I mean, he was supposed to be that Canadian receiver out there, and Mike Jones got the opportunity, and he really pounced on it.
And he's made him expendable. Now you have a question. Do you bring Chambers back? Do you bring Jones back?
Yeah, I don't think it's much of a question.
All due respect to Shamont Chambers, I don't think it's a question at all.
No, I don't think so either. You got to bring the young kid back and, you know, sign him up for a couple more years. As long as he doesn't sign in the AAF, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, anything. I don't know. I can't think.
No, he'll be getting money.
He's going to get way more money than
CFL. For sure.
But on that catch, we have to talk about June Jones, who still, 30 coaching games into his CFL career, continues to make some head-scratching decisions. We can talk about the punt or field goal thing from BC a few months back till we're blue in the face. But in this one, you said it was touchdown or nothing because – they get the ball at inside the five with 12 seconds left, and they don't snap the ball till there's zeros. And then they call timeout, and the referee goes, timeout with zeros on the clock. You don't hear that in other football leagues because if the clock hits zero, the half or the quarter of the game is over. Call timeout as soon as he catches the ball. I think it was a run, actually. Yes, it was. It was Dane Evans went for the run and got stuffed. Call timeout right away. Then you got two plays to go for the touchdown. Because at that point, you're down. They were down three scores at that time. You're going for the touchdown in front of the 2 yard. You're not taking a field goal unless you're an idiot, unless you're Mike McCarthy and you're, you know, Seattle's one. Anyway, they wasted 12 seconds in a potential extra play. And the throw from Mazzoli, like you said, Jones bobbled it. It was outside. Like it was Mike Jones had to make a hell of a catch, but what the hell was June Jones thinking?
That's the third time that he's messed up the timing at the end of the first half in this season, I believe. And I don't see what's so hard about figuring this out, you know? It's like you can't call a timeout with zeros on the clock. Maybe if, you know, you have to change the play up, you don't like the look of the defense or whatever. But if you can get two plays in, you call the timeout right away. And someone, I don't understand why someone didn't come over to him and say, hey, he's the head coach, you know, I guess, you know, he should know. I'm not going to make excuses for him, but he did blunt. He messed up that call once again. So it's very disappointing.
The other, I think we talk more about Jones's flub here if it was the biggest boner in this game, but it wasn't. And we're going to switch over to the Red Blacks here. Jonathan Rose. Mm. Would be our bozo. I think he will. You know what? Let's call it like he's a bozo. Because we got slapdicks we got to talk about in a second.
Yes.
We're calling Jonathan Rose a bozo. I think we got to call Red Blacks fans who are Zapruder filming this thing to death bozos as well. I've seen some comments from these people that, oh, the ref was falling and Rose was trying to help. Like, it's go on Twitter and just.
It's really incredible.
It's.
It's highly entertaining.
It's very entertaining, but it's also very disturbing.
Yes.
There's no excuse here. When Will Hill did this, so what we're talking about, obviously, is Jonathan Rose two-hand shoved a referee in a scrum after he got a penalty for a tackle that was way out of bounds that he himself called clean. And it's like, dude, you're on the bench.
Yeah.
And you bulldogs the guy down. And yes, there was a melee, and I'm sure you could have thrown some flags on some Ticats players there as well. But Rose deserved the flag. Then he shoves the referee, deserves the ejection for that. And then you've got, he's getting high-fived by fans. He's getting defended by fans. He's getting defended by his general manager, which, look, I'm not going to rip Marcel Desjardins too much. Because a couple of weeks ago, Mike O'Shea defended, I guess it was last week, Mike defended the Jackson Jeffcoat hit on Brandon Bridge. Coaches and GMs are going to defend their players. I get it. It's, as a fan, as a, I can't say impartial because I hate the Red Blacks, but as someone who's not a part of the organization or a fan of the organization, I can look at this and go, how do you defend that? It's ridiculous. But at the same time, I get where they're coming from. But man, this was bozo behavior if I've ever seen it from everyone involved.
Absolutely. I thought there could have been another 15-yard penalty on that play to Rose. I think it was Rose who grabbed someone's face mask on the sideline.
Yep, he did.
So it should have been 45 yards in penalties. But I digress. It's you just don't do that. I mean, that's one of the number one rules in sports. You can't lay your hands on a referee, especially shove him over. I mean, the excuses are ridiculous. He slipped.
He slipped.
Yeah. Someone had a picture of the sidelines. It was slippery or whatever. It's like, come on, man. It was clearly a shove. He knew what he was doing. He shouldn't be playing in the Grey Cup, but, you know, he appealed it, and I fully expected that. There's too much money at stake. Even if the team loses, they still get $8,000. So he had to do that, but it's just an unfortunate incident. I thought maybe it could have been a turning point for the Tiger Cats. You know, you take one of the best DBs on their team out of the game, you pick on that new DB coming in, but it just didn't work out. But a definite, probably the biggest bozo of the year goes to Rose, for sure.
Yeah, I knew. So he was suspended one game by the league. Came out, I believe that was Tuesday. Announced almost immediately that he'll appeal the suspension. It's unlikely they'll find an arbitrator to do this. So he is more than likely going to play in the Grey Cup. That disappoints me, not because I don't think he should appeal. I don't necessarily agree that he should appeal. In the previous two instances of this happening a couple years ago, both with Will Hill and Gary Peters, they did not appeal their suspensions. That said, their next games weren't the Grey Cup, where they're going to get a significant boost. Oh, you knew he was going to appeal. You knew.
I know, but you got to know that.
That he's going to appeal.
True, but you got to, if you're Justin Rose, you got to know, if you do something stupid like this, like the biggest game of the year is coming up, you can't be doing that. That shows how stupid he is.
Yeah, the thing with me is, the league took, this happened on Sunday, the league took until Tuesday. They should have had a press release announcing a suspension Sunday night.
Yeah.
And not only that, they should have been on the phone with the CFLPA and an arbitrator figuring this out to get this settled immediately. The fact that this is going to drag on when you knew, like everyone watching that game as soon as it happened, if you go on Twitter, I'm sure you're going to see a bunch of tweets from that around that time going, well, he's going to get suspended. Everyone knew he was going to get suspended. The league waits until Tuesday afternoon to announce a suspension. They don't have an arbitrator. Like, I feel like they're almost building in an excuse where they can go, look, we are taking this seriously. We did suspend him, but there is an appeals process that has to be
played out.
Yes, that's – thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And – but the league looks good for suspending a player, and the player still gets to play, so it's win-win for everybody. This seems to me like it's just it's not dithering because they did actually do something, but they did take their sweet-ass time.
Well, it took a day. It took a day.
But it shouldn't. You knew.
I know.
Everyone knew he was going to. Yeah. You could have had this announced before the West final started.
If they announced it Monday, would it have mattered? Like in the process?
Maybe. Well, because then he announced it. So I think no matter what day they announced it, he obviously was going to appeal, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if, like, why they didn't have all their ducks in a row, like, plan. Okay, right. We're going to announce a suspension. He's going to announce his appeal. We have to figure out how to get an arbitrator in Edmonton as quickly as possible. Like, get it all set up before, plan for the inevitability of him going, I'm not losing out on $18,000 to $16,000.
Right.
I'm going to, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a way that the league could have done this where Rose still could have missed the Grey Cup, and they didn't. I'm not, this is, to me, the only person that needs to be blamed for any of this is Jonathan Rose.
Oh, of course, yeah.
This is a non-issue. This is not even a thing if he's not a complete idiot.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish this would have, I don't know, maybe gone, justice could have been quicker in this instance.
It's safe to say that Randy Ambrosi's honeymoon with the league is over. I've seen a lot of complaints on Twitter.
I've made a lot of complaints about Randy Ambrosi recently.
Yes. There's issues. There is issues to take care of, and pretty much everything he's done I've been happy with up until maybe late in the season this year, earlier in the season this year. There's been some things that have popped up, but I still think he's a solid commissioner, but he has to fix some stuff, that's for sure.
Here's how I feel about him. I think he's doing a fine job. He seems to be big on words so far, mm-hmm. and he hasn't really paid everything off. Expansion. This type of stuff. Like, there's a lot – the Mexico thing. Like, there's a lot of this is what we want to do, and then he gets the headlines for that, and everyone goes, oh, my God, we're going to do this, and then it kind of peters out, right?
Right.
I need to see some actual tangible –
To be fair,
evidence.
Though, they are trying to get this expansion thing going.
Yep.
And it can't be just – obviously, you can't just be done overnight.
No.
But things are in motion. The Mexico thing, I don't know. I could care less about that, really. I understand he wants to expand the game globally, but I think we've talked about this before. Maybe we should focus in on Canada before we start going to Mexico and Venezuela and Brazil or whatever. So
the Venezuelan Football League, that must be something.
Maybe there is one. There's a lot of football leagues around the world that we don't know about. But yeah, I'm still behind him, but there's work to be done.
Indeed. Before we move on to the news, Mike, we have to talk about the slappiest of slap dicks
mm-hmm.
from Slap Nation.
Yes.
That's a lot of slaps in
There's
one sentence.
A lot of slaps.
That totally lived up to their name on Sunday night. Some members of the Red Blacks fandom took it upon themselves to dump a vat of snow on Dylan Atak, who, if you're a Ticats fan, you know who Dylan is. You know him from games. You know him from social media. One of the nicest people you'll ever have the pleasure of interacting with. He was essentially assaulted mm-hmm. at the game, and Steve Simmons of the Toronto Sun wrote about it, wrote also about how Red Blacks fans after the game threw beer cans at Alex Green. This is hooliganism. This is the type of crap you see at soccer matches in Europe. This is not what sports fandom should be about. It's disgusting. Happily, I can say that I've seen a number of members of the Red Blacks fandom that have disavowed this and said that it's ridiculous. I'm a little upset that the Red Blacks released a press statement and called Dylan a fan. Dylan is an employee of the team and has been for years. He's not a fan. This is not an altercation in the stands.
No.
This is something that happened between fans.
He was on the sidelines.
He was on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Where the hell is security, Mike, when stuff like this goes down? I went to a game in Toronto at the Sky Dome years ago, and they have the tarps in front of some of the seats because you can only sit so far down.
Yeah.
We got our tickets from a scalper. I mean, maybe I shouldn't say that, but we got our tickets from a scalper. We sat front row, and they got an Argos banner there, and my buddy put his Ticats sweater over it, and the second it hit, security was like, no, you got to move that. You got to get that off there.
Well, they were strict at the Skydome.
Very, very strict.
Yeah.
Where the hell is security when this is – how does –
I don't know.
Could you imagine – what happens if it happens with a player?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know what
I
mean? What happens if this was a coach?
Yeah.
But it shouldn't matter who it happened to. This was a member of the organization, an employee of the team who was assaulted by fans from the stands. That's disgusting. That's despicable.
Yeah.
That I hope they find who these people are, and I hope they're banished from any further games at TD Place.
I hope so too. And the, you know, the Dylan thing obviously enrages me. The Alex Green thing, you know, Hamilton fans have thrown batteries at Mike O'Shea. Let's not pretend. I know you weren't. But let's not pretend that there aren't.
No, there are slap dicks in all fandoms.
Oh, of course. The Alex Green thing is not cool, but I kind of get it. Not that you should throw anything at a player, but I'm just saying. But the Dylan thing is totally, totally unacceptable, and they should be punished, like you said. It's scum behavior, and I do not appreciate it one bit.
It's poor winning.
Yeah.
It's you won, and you're still going to do this type of junk?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man. Like, yeah. Be happy your team's going to the Grey Cup. Celebrate with your fellow fans. When I was in the stands in 98, when Ozzie made the kick, I wasn't looking for Alouettes fans or Alouettes employees to dump stuff on. I was too busy hugging and high-fiving all the strangers around me because I was so goddamn ecstatic that you were going
back. They're spoiled, Josh. They've been to two Grey Cups in what, three.
This is their third.
Holy moly.
They went 15, 16, and 18 in 5 years.
And, like, what? We've...
Winnipeg hasn't been one since 2011. Montreal hasn't been to one since 2010.
Yeah.
The Ticats have been to two.
Mm-hmm.
The Stamps have obviously been to quite a few. But, yeah, 5 years in existence, there's third Grey Cup. And they got a damn good shot to win this thing on Sunday. But
I think so.
You're right. Maybe there is a bit of an entitlement with their fan base. And I do take a lot of heat from some of the, I'd say, more reasonable members of Slap Nation. They're not slap dicks, but there's pretty good fans. And some people do take umbrage with some of the things I have to say about the Redblacks, and that's fine. You know, it's a rivalry. I'm stoking the flames here a little bit.
Exactly.
But there is in no universe, on no earth in the multiverse where this is an acceptable type of celebration or whatever. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, this is just, it's completely unacceptable. And like I said, I hope the people who did this are found and are
completely banned from Tim Hortons Field. Everywhere. And they should be banned from their own stadium as well.
Should be banned from everywhere.
Yeah. So, we'll have to put that behind us, and maybe it'll stoke the rivalry even more for next year. I mean, we gotta put a whooping on them next year.
You gotta start beating these guys.
Yeah, we have to. I mean,
they're starting to make me look like an idiot. All the crap I talk about them. I gotta. You know how much crow I had to eat on Sunday? It was terrible.
I know. Well, you know, it's been a one-sided rivalry for a while. We just can't beat these guys, and it boils my blood. I do not like them whatsoever. You know my hate for the Calgary Stampeders.
Yes.
And I'm considering cheering – and Bo. And I'm considering cheering for them this Sunday.
All in on the Stamps.
Yeah, I know. Either way, I'll be disappointed. But, yeah, if the Stamps win, I won't cry about it.
All right, man. Let's move on to some news. And it's not so much news it is. We're going to talk about kind of what's in the offing for this team come the offseason because – sadly, that's where we are at this point. Here's what we know, and this is thanks to Steve Milton, Hamilton Spectator and Three Down Nation. We know that in the front office, Eric Tillman, Sean Burke, and Drew Alamang, all their deals are expiring, but I can't imagine those guys won't be brought back. Drew has done – look at the Canadians. He's the Canadian scout. He's kind of runs the draft almost.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the quality Canadians this team has brought in over the years. Guys like Brandon Revenberg, Darius Sirocco, Rookie of the Year nominee for the Ticats, could have been Rookie of the Year. In any other year, if Lewis Ward doesn't kick all those field goals, Sirocco is the nominee for Rookie of the Year and might win the whole darn thing. Started from day one. That's unheard of. Yeah, and he was a guy who didn't seem out of place at all. Definitely. Brandon Revenberg, another guy who made Peter Dyakowski expendable, right? So this Mike Jones, you brought him up. We saw Sean Thomas Erlington, Mercer Timmis. The amount of Canadians on this team that we seem to get – heavy contribution. Sean Thompson Arlington was an eighth round pick. How many other eighth round picks from the last 10 years are even still in the league, yeah, let alone contributing? He scored a touchdown in a playoff game. He had almost had 100 yards rushing in a game this year. He's
every time he gets a chance, he shows that he's a player.
Yeah.
For sure.
So these guys, I can't imagine they're going to be going anywhere. Orlando Steinhauer, obviously there's a lot of rumors about him, especially with the opening in Toronto, even BC. Where will he be going? We know who's not a free agent, and this is probably easier to list off than the amount of free agents, because yeah, holy hell, does this team have a lot of free agents. Jeremiah Mazzoli, Braylon Addison, Justin Buren, Luke Tasker, Darius Sirocco, Avery Jordan, and Brandon Revenberg offensively all have contracts for next season. All those guys have starting experience. Justin Buren's another guy. We didn't even talk about him amongst Canadians. Mm-hmm. Came in late in the season, and look, he didn't do a ton stats-wise, but started games, made some catches. Yep. Like, he was, I think, a fifth-round pick. Just this past year, like that. This is unheard of. This is why a guy like Drew Alamang, I think, is one of the unsung heroes of this franchise, this organization, and is a guy that absolutely needs to be
back. He's a guy that other teams will look at and be like, hey, look at all
– why don't make him GM?
Exactly.
You're looking for a GM. There couldn't be a better guy than that.
I mean, the guy obviously knows his Canadian talent, and that's pretty much the most important thing in this league, that they have a ton of Canadian talent. He's been doing a tremendous job for years now with the Tiger Cats. You got to think that other teams are going to be interested, and I hope we can get him back, you know, because the work in the draft has been tremendous. All our, you know, one of our things that we can take into next year is that we have a ton of Canadian talent, mm-hmm, one of the best Canadian talent groups in the league. So we'll see.
And the thing about drafting good Canadian talent and scouting good American talent means you're not dipping into free agency and overpaying for guys.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to sign Chris Brazel away from the BC Lions.
That's a name.
Yeah, exactly. And spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on them to play seven games and then be a bust.
Yeah.
You're able to get these guys here. And then when you bring guys in, they get used to your culture, they get used to your locker room, and they want to stay. So maybe they take $5,000 less, $10,000 less, because they're comfortable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that can help too. Defensively speaking, Mike, Justin Capicotti, Julian Hauser, Connor McGuff, another great draft pick who hasn't really performed on defense but has been a whirlwind on special teams. Jamal Westerman, Teddy Laurent, Jamal Roll, and Frankie Williams will all be back next season. So there's a lot of names.
There's some good names on there.
There's some good names there, but there are a lot of names we didn't say.
Yeah, true.
And that's what we don't know is who will be back. And I will list them off. I'm going to go as quickly as I can. Bryant Moniz, Alex Green, John White, Mercer Timmis, Mike Jones, Markway McDaniel, Terrell Sinkfield, Chris Williams, Shamad Chambers, Jalen Saunders, Terrence Tolliver, Brandon Banks, Jean-Thomas Erlington, Felix Faubert-Lussier, Kelvin Palmer, Mike Filer, Riker Matthews, Landon Rice, Adrian Tracy, Jason Neal, Nikita Whitlock, Justin Vaughn, Larry Dean, Simone Lawrence, Don Unamba, Terrell Davis, Mike Daly, Delvin Bro, Cariel Brooks, Richard Leonard, Josh Johnson, Courtney Steven, Liram Hirelahu, and Aaron Crawford.
Whew, wow.
That is a long list. There are some superstar players on that list. So, Mike, all of this being said, there are a number of guys that we know will be back. There are a number of guys that we know are free agents. Pick three. You can only pick three that you can bring back for next season. Who are your three and why?
It's tough to just pick three.
But almost impossible.
We don't want to be here for 7 hours recording the podcast. So my three are Mike Jones. Mike Jones. I believe that, you know, we talked about it earlier. I believe that Mike Jones is a rising star in this league. I think he can be a 1,000-plus yard receiver. He's Canadian. You could get him at a decent price, I believe. You know, you're going to have to pay. But it's not going to be, you know, a Brad Sinopoli type contract, an Andy Fantuz in the past type contract. I think you got to bring him back, especially with Shamad Chambers, you know, the injury, the questions, if he's going to be back. So Mike Jones is number one for me. Don Unamba, I think, was, you know, a tremendous linebacker this year. He really stepped up his game. You know, we've been trying to replace that position for a long time now.
Since Eric Harris left.
He did a tremendous job, so I think you got to bring him back. And Riker Matthews, you know, the young left tackle who's just been has been awesome since he's been in the league. I know you're a huge fan of his.
This team's turnaround when June Jones took over also coincided with Matthews starting at right tackle in the Labor Day Classic. I'm not saying – should we do tackle wins? Should that be a stat to go with quarterback wins?
It should be.
But he solidified. That was the one spot. Those tackle spots were weaknesses, right? Mm-hmm. And Tony Washington did a good job there.
Yeah, it's my bad. He's the right tackle.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh, did you say left tackle?
Yeah, I said left tackle. Catch. Yeah, it's all good.
But you know what I mean? He's been solid on that right side. They've cycled through some guys on the left, mm-hmm. but they've had – even like regardless of who they had, Tony Washington was great. They traded him. They used Avery Jordan. He performed mm-hmm. well. He gets hurt. They throw in Kelvin
Palmer. Another young guy.
Yeah. who will be back next season. They throw in Kelvin Palmer, who's a free agent, but he's like – the offensive line was actually pretty good for this team this year, and Matthews was a reason for it.
Yeah. He's been great. The last guy that I want back –
that was your three.
Oh, that was three.
Jeez, trying to steal a fourth one?
Yeah, I was trying to
steal. I said three. Follow the rules, man.
I know. I'm sorry. Your turn.
You kind of opened the door for me to take the easy route here. And Alex Green, I think, has got to be back. I think it'd be disappointing.
Not John White?
I think Alex Green's better. Mm-hmm. I know you and I got into it earlier in the season. But I think the proof's in the pudding, man. Alex Green is a stud. And I think that's a guy that they – as good as John White was, especially once he got back into game shape,
mm-hmm.
I just think Alex Green adds that little bit more. The touchdown machine, as we call him, I think he's got, what, 13 TDs in 16 career games? That's freaking pretty incredible. Jalen Saunders, I think, is another guy. If he doesn't get hurt, he had like 770 yards by Labor Day.
He would have put up Brandon Banks type numbers.
He would have. What would that offense have been able to – what would Mazzoli's numbers have been
mm-hmm.
with the guy putting up another 700-800 yards receiving if he would have stayed healthy? And last but certainly not least, you mentioned him. It's Brandon Banks. Brandon Banks is the best receiver in the CFL. And that's no disrespect to guys like Duke Williams, guys like Darrell Walker, Manny Arsenault, Greg Ellings. Like, there's a lot of great receivers in this. But in this offense – with this team, he is unstoppable. You know he's going to get the ball 7-8 times a game. You know they're going to throw him deep.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's just really grasped this offense and its nuances, if he just has a telekinetic ability to read Jeremiah Mazzoli's mind. But Brandon Banks in this offense is the most dangerous player in the CFL.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I think he knows how important he is to this offense. I think he knows that if he goes somewhere else, he might not get used to his full potential like he will here. But Brandon Banks, to me, he's number one on my list of absolute must bring backs.
Yeah, you got to pay the guy.
You have to. That's fine.
Did he take a pay cut?
Took a pay cut a couple years ago, but he was a free agent last year after that big second half of the season. So I imagine he recouped a lot of that money.
Yeah, you got to pay him. I mean, he was the most important. One of the most important parts of this offense, you could argue, Jeremiah Mazzoli.
Yeah.
But the guy just makes this offense turn. Like you said, he just knows where to go. I don't know if he's always using those option routes just to read the defense and sit down or go deep or whatever it calls for. But he finds the open spots and he catches pretty much everything. So, yeah, we got to get this guy back.
All right, let's move on to the three players we think won't be back next year. This is not necessarily the three players we don't want back, just the three that we think the Ticats might look to either replace or to let walk for greener pastures. So, Mike, why don't you kick us off with your three? Only three, not
only
don't
three.
Try to sneak in a fourth.
All right. The first one is Shamad Chambers. I thought the year before this year, he showed some flashes. And we've always talked about how this guy has a ton of potential. He's never lived up to it. I thought that he would this year. Unfortunately, he got injured. With the stepping up of Mike Jones and a guy like Justin Buren in the mix now, I think this guy's extendable.
Yeah, I kind of made him expendable. It's probably going to cost you a bit of change to keep him too because he's a vet.
Exactly. You can probably sign Mike Jones for a little bit cheaper. Maybe not after the year he had this year.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I think he's out of the picture. Richard Leonard.
Tough sophomore season for Leonard.
Yes, after a tremendous rookie season in the league, he really fell off. Maybe because of all the man-to-man, he just couldn't keep up. I don't know. But I don't see him being back. And the last one is the kicker. I know that, you know, he does all the, you know, he punts, he kicks off, he kicks field goals. He just wasn't good enough this year. I think we got to find some new blood at the kicking position.
I think unless they go with a young guy who – unless they find their Lewis Ward.
He'll probably be back.
I think the kicker will be back. Yeah. I don't think he'll get as much money as he got last year. I think he was in the near $150,000 range. But he's a Canadian guy who does all three jobs. Whether he does them to the satisfaction of us in the fandom, that's up for debate. But I honestly, unless they find someone who can do it all and is Canadian and can do it cheaper, I do think he'll be back.
Put him under the I don't want back.
Okay. Okay. So the guys that I think won't be back, I think first is Terrence Tolliver. I think once June Jones took over this team, he kind of fell out of favor. Now, he was injured last year, got injured again this year, but there just never seemed to be a role for him in this offense. He doesn't fit the mold of what a June Jones coached team likes. He is fast, but he's big. He's more of a possession guy, and we saw it with Andy Fantuz when he wasn't brought back. And we've seen this team when they needed guys. I know they brought in Mark Wayne McDaniel, but again, it's small, speedy receivers. I don't think Tolliver's back. Courtney Steven is a guy I could see him returning if he's happy with his special teams role. But
yeah, he could be a starter somewhere else.
He could be a starter somewhere else. A team like Toronto, he gets to stay in the area. I could also see him going, you know what, he's got a lot of interest outside of the game, and I could see him maybe even at this point being ready to move on. If he doesn't get the type of offers, though, I could see him back, but I think a team will take a shot at him as a starting safety. And I think Alex Green will be back, so I don't think John White will be. And that's a shame because we finally got a chance to cheer for John. I've been a John White fan, and I said this when they signed him for so long. He had some bursts here, but if you got to pick between the two, as much as I called you a complete idiot 3-4 months ago, I'm the idiot. It's Alex Green. It's Green's better than White.
And yeah, I think he just
goes without saying.
Yeah, I think overall, I heard June Jones talk about that he's a better blocker as well, which would surprise me a bit because John White's such a thick dude who can throw his body around. But apparently, he's better blocking in the passing schemes. Catch the ball in the backfield like a boss. He just does everything well. So yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that one, obviously.
So we head into the offseason. What does this team need to change? We can use this time to kind of talk about the defense a little bit here and their regression over the last half of the season. Every single game where they gave up 30 or more points happened from September onward. Four of the five games in which they allowed over 400 yards of offense came in the second half of the season. Should a change be made at defensive coordinator? Because clearly Jerry Glanville got these guys playing lights out early on, but something happened late in the season. Did teams figure out the defense? Could that have been it? Like,
I think that might have been it.
Should they be looking for a new defensive coordinator?
I like Jerry. I think they should. That, you know, in the most important game of the year, this defense gave up 6 passing touchdowns.
Came up very small.
That is unacceptable to show up like that. I know that the players love him, but I think it's, you know, he had his 1 year. He did okay. Like, the defense was pretty good all season long, but like you said, you can't be regressing in the second half of the season when it's the most important ball. So for that reason, I think we might have to switch it up at D coordinator.
I wonder who they get.
That's a good question.
I mean, that's always the question, right? Like, it's easy to fire guys, but it's a lot harder to hire them.
Yeah.
And Glanville is a June Jones guy. So if June Jones is back,
Jerry will probably be back. Probably. I mean, they'd be tied at the hip their whole football coaching career pretty much. So, you know, I won't burn down my apartment if he's back, but I wouldn't mind seeing a switch there.
And that kind of brings us to the last thing here, and it's about June Jones. And obviously with the rumors swirling around Orlando Steinhauer and possibly him leaving to become a head coach somewhere else, a lot of fans are very concerned that we will once again lose Steinhauer somewhere else as opposed to making him our head coach. Will June Jones be back? Will they shuffle this up? Will they make Steinhauer the coach? As much as I think Steinhauer deserves a shot, and he will get a shot, whether it's in Hamilton or elsewhere, sooner rather than later, I'm not sure I want the team to fire June Jones. I think this team, yes, they're a 500 football club with Jones at the helm, and yes, that's not good enough. It needs to be better and all those other sorts of things. But this team plays an exciting brand of football. They have won games. They've made the playoffs. They were one game away from the Grey Cup. Like, I don't feel like this is a team that needs a wholesale rebuild, right? Like, this is a team that, yeah, okay, maybe playing in the Eastern Division gives them some sort of leeway to be not as good as they need to be, but, like, everyone talked about the Edmonton Eskimos and how, well, Edmonton should have made the playoffs. Ticats beat them twice. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a team, like, yes, you mentioned earlier, they lost all the games to the top-tier teams, so maybe they're not there yet, but I feel like this team needs tweaks, not massive changes, and I don't know if I would fire Jones or let Jones go to keep Steinhauer. It's a tough one.
Because it is
I would hate to see Steinhauer move up to the Argos and become their coach for the next decade, win four Grey Cups, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, do you get rid of a coach that's been somewhat successful? And maybe most of all for, like, I know wins is what most fans care about. I like entertaining football, and this team is entertaining to watch even in defeat. I'd rather watch this team. Like, do you remember those mid-2000s teams where they were scoring like 11 points a game? They were awful. Yes. Give me a team that scores points and loses over a team that doesn't score points and loses. Yeah. Give me a team that wins over anything else. But I don't know. What would you do? Would you – again, we're not saying this is the situation where Steinhauer's going to be like, it's me. Either you make me a coach or I'm going somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But if that's the case, what do you do?
I like June Jones. I don't believe that he deserves to be fired. I mean, this is a team that was 0-8 when he took over. He's done a tremendous job turning this team around, turning this culture around. They've won games. I know that they're 8-10 this year, but I think you bring him back. I mean, there's 2 years left on his contract, if I'm correct. Mm-hmm. If you get rid of him now, you're paying that contract, and you're paying the new head coach. Not that I really care about the financial situation of that, but it just
well. And how is this affected by that new coaching front office?
True,
cap?
True. I forgot about that. Yeah, so
which we still don't have official. Like, that's never been officially.
Does
recognized.
It count towards the cap if fire the guy, but he's still under contract?
So I was listening to Drew and Justin on the Three Down podcast, and Justin, who knows it all, said that there'll be like an amnesty provision where once every 5 years you can have a coach's contract not count towards the cap. But again, this has never been officially announced.
No.
Like, this is all rumor and speculation. I trust Dunk because if Dunk says it, it's correct.
Yep.
As we've proven time and time again.
Henry Burst.
Hashtag fake news Henry Burst. Okay, buddy. Yeah. So I trust everything that comes out of that man's mouth. Do you fire a coach and eat that contract while it counts against the cap, which means you can't get it? Like,
no.
Who knows? Like, what happens?
I think if he wants to be back, you bring him back. If he doesn't want to be back, then yeah, he doesn't want to be back. But I think he does, and I think he wants to finish the job that he started. So
I think so too.
You know, I'd like to see him back.
You saw a lot of talk from the players about how this was the closest, and you hear that a lot from players at the end of the season, how this was the closest knit team that they've ever been on. Simone Lawrence at the end of the game, some crying on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. I feel like Jones has, and this is no disrespect to Ken Austin, who won a lot of football games for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Jones fosters a different locker room, and it's much more
loose.
I feel it's looser. It's more collaborative.
More fun.
It's more fun, and I think these guys love playing for him. I think they love playing for Steinhauer as well.
Yeah, and Glanville, for that matter.
Yeah, but I just feel like June Jones offers something that I haven't seen from a head coach in any league in a long time, and it's honesty.
Yeah.
He is brutally honest in a way that I really enjoy. And people can say, oh, it's detrimental and all this other sorts of stuff. But at the same time, if he came out with the standard boilerplate answers, he'd get killed for that too, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm with you. I like June Jones. I don't know if he'll ever – he's never really won championships anywhere else he's been. He's been good enough to get teams to the precipice but never take them over the hump. But you know, it's a 19 league, man. And next year, who knows what could happen.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of June Jones. I hope he's back, and I hope we can keep Steinhauer happy, you know, as the assistant head coach or whatever, and just to ensure him that this is going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
You will be the head coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Just and I know that the temptation will be there, but I hope we can keep him under wraps and keep him on this team because I think he's a very important part of it.
So I'm here in Edmonton in Mike's lovely apartment enjoying all that Alberta has to offer right now for the Grey Cup. But if things go well, it could be you, Mr. Michael, that is visiting me in Hamilton in 2 years at this time of year because officially the Hamilton Tiger Cats are bidding on the 2020 Grey Cup. They are going to be going up against bids from both Saskatchewan and Montreal. I don't think we have to get into the history of it's been since 96. Mike even owns a 96 Grey Cup jacket that still looks brand freaking new, which is really impressive. Mm-hmm. that I saw in his closet this week. All things being equal though, Mike, if each team makes an equally great presentation, 2020 is in Hamilton, Tim Hortons Field, no?
It has to be. It has to be. I know Montreal, it's been a while.
It hasn't been 20 years. It
hasn't been 20 years. No, 22 years.
22, no. Yeah. By the time the Cup gets there, 24. It would have been 24 years since the last one.
And that's just way too long. So it's a great Cup. But in a team that has had eight teams, nine teams, I know that it was somewhat of a disaster in 96. I remember the bus ride to the stadium. Me and my dad saw that they were giving away tickets at the Tim Hortons. So, but that was a totally different time.
Completely different time.
The league was in big trouble at that time. It might have been the last Grey Cup. This time around, I believe it would be a huge success. And I believe it would be a huge success in Saskatchewan or Montreal, but you just have to give it to Hamilton. It's been too long. If they put a good presentation forward to host this thing, they should get it.
The excuse of why this year's Grey Cup, outside of the lawsuits, if Hamilton had bid, the things I heard were you can't have it in the East 3 years in a row. 2016 Toronto, 2017 Ottawa, 2018 Hamilton. Can't do it, not fair to the rest of the country. 2018's in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. 2019's in Calgary. Same bloody province. Mm-hmm. You do 2020 in Saskatchewan, well, that's three in the West. I've been told that's not fair.
Yeah.
Montreal,
What's Saskatchewan, Josh? What's Saskatchewan?
But the thing is Saskatchewan, and with that new stadium, Saskatchewan is going to get a Grey Cup.
Oh, yeah. Maybe the next year.
Is it really that big a deal if they go the next year?
No.
We haven't had one. So. It'll be almost 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are people with children. There are people who, like, just think of how a quarter of a century almost since the last time Hamilton will have hosted a Grey Cup by the time 2020 rolls around.
Yeah, and the ownership deserves it. You know, Bob Young, I know at this point the team has turned around their financials and they're making mm-hmm. money now. I don't know how much, but they're making a profit, but he lost a lot of money for you know several years. So the city deserves it. Bob Young deserves it. The team deserves it. You know, it's just meant to be, I think, in 2020.
Hamilton as a city, and because I've heard a lot of, well, Hamilton's this, Hamilton's that. And my question to all those people, when's the last time you were in Hamilton? It is not – when did you leave the area?
Oh, boy. I think it was – around 2007.
It's completely different.
Yeah.
It's completely different from 2000, like from 2013. It's a different, like,
right.
It has grown in the last 5 to 10 years. It is not the Hamilton that people think of when they think
Steel City.
They think Steel City. They think, you know, kind of grimy. They think mm-hmm. working class. And all those things still do apply in some sense.
Right.
It's a lot different city. It's there's an arts community, there's restaurants, there's hotels. It's not a tourist destination because of how close they are to Toronto, and Hamilton doesn't have a bunch of like tourist attractions to begin with. But it's a city I think that is fully invested in trying to make it as good as it can be, and one that can very easily and very successfully host a Grey Cup. If you don't think the citizens of that city, like myself, who have been clamoring for this, aren't going to try to do everything possible to make it the best experience for visiting fans and visiting Canadians to show off this new Hamilton, you're out of your mind. This is going to be a success, and in 2 years' time, I really hope it's there.
Well, I think we should probably end the Grey Cups because this one's going to be the best ever, and no one can follow it. So, you know. But yeah, I'd love to see it in 2020 Hamilton, and then I'd love to see it back in Montreal because Montreal, mm-hmm. it's been a while for them. I don't know what the deal is with the Big O. I heard that they couldn't host one because of the roof or something, but obviously they've fixed that if they're bidding. So, you know, I'd like to see Hamilton get it, Montreal, then Saskatchewan, or vice versa with that.
All right, let's move on to the only piece of CFL news we have this week because we're going to cover Grey Cup stuff later in the week. We're going to have a special bonus episode talking about the game itself, what we've kind of experienced.
Josh is going to go bungee jumping.
I am not going to go bungee jumping because I barely was able to get on the plane to get here because of how afraid of heights I am.
Sure.
There's a reason I didn't pick a window seat while I was on the plane. So we're going to talk about all the Grey Cup stuff. So before that, though, we have the new CFL rule on hiring coaches, and that teams cannot contact coaches that are currently employed by any other teams, including teams that are no longer playing, until 48 hours after the Grey Cup. Now, I wrote a piece for Three Down Nation talking about how this was needlessly restrictive, and I compared it, and you will appreciate this, to the bear tax from the classic Simpsons episode where I pay the let the bears pay the bear tax. I pay the Homer tax.
We're here. We're clear. We don't want any more bears.
It was, to me, this is pointless. I gave a comparison in the piece to the NFL, and I know people hate when the CFL and the NFL are compared, but I'm doing it anyway. Last year's Super Bowl time, both Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels, who later reneged on his deal, we knew going into that game they were both heading off to be head coaches in other cities. Mm-hmm. Patricia was going to the Lions, and McDaniel was going to the Colts. McDaniel backed out, ended up staying in New England. That's neither here nor there. But we knew going into the Super Bowl, and the NFL, the most tightly wound, focused, we don't let anything leak league, mm-hmm. and the New England Patriots, who are the epitome of that as a team, no one cared. It took a little bit away from the game. Oh, we're going to talk a little bit about this. Because the NFL's like, you're talking about the NFL in a positive manner?
Yeah.
We don't care. You say whatever you want. If you're talking about it positively, that's all we care about. The CFL puts this rule in place, and it's like, we don't want anything to distract from the game. The game sells itself. This week's going to sell itself. Is it really that bad if we spend 30 minutes or an hour or even a day
speculating
or talking about is it that big a deal?
No.
You're still talking about the league. You're still talking about it positively. Mm-hmm. You're talking about two cities in BC and Toronto that need head coaches that are two of the cities that need the most publicity.
Sure.
All eyes are on the CFL right now for Grey Cup. You're telling me the Argos hiring a coach, naming their new head coach, wouldn't get more publicity than it will next week or a month from now when everyone's kind of, and this is not a shot at the league, kind of forgotten about the CFL because Grey Cup's over. Yeah. We're in the midst of that beginning of the off season where nothing really happens.
NHL, NBA, NFL, everything's going on.
Exactly. So it's going to get buried in the news, whereas this week you have the sole focus of the country, essentially. All the media is here. Seems like a really silly rule. It seems really silly.
It's unnecessary, but at the same time, I don't give a crap. 48 hours, I mean, you know, it'd be good to talk about it. You know, you hear the rumors there. This team's talking to that guy. But I don't care.
It just feels like doing nothing would have been, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
why implement a rule?
It's unnecessary, completely unnecessary. Yeah.
Why implement a rule for something that wasn't a problem?
Yeah. Yeah.
Again.
And when there is actual problems that they need to address.
Yeah, very much that. And that's why I compared it to the bear tax.
Yeah.
This all came about because Chris Jones left Edmonton. There was all those rumors right before he won the Grey Cup.
Yes.
He's leaving to go to Saskatchewan and yada, yada, yada. And it took a wave. And it's like, but did it? Like.
Now, the more you can talk about, the better, I'd say.
That's what I think. That's what I think.
I agree with your points. I just don't give a damn.
Yeah, it's not. It's like, to me, it's just silly.
Yeah. Agreed.
Like we said, we will be coming out with a bonus Grey Cup edition. We'll talk about all the fun stuff. I mean, all the fun stuff Mike did. I'm going to do my best to hide myself in public so that people actually don't talk to me. If you are listening to this show and do happen to see us,
you can come talk to me.
Yeah, talk to Mike.
Yeah, I'm a social butterfly, so come talk to me.
I am a hermit who would much prefer to stand in the corner with a mask on and have no one recognize me, but
should have shaved the beard.
Never.
People wouldn't recognize you.
That doesn't matter.
Okay.
I'd rather be recognized with the beard than not recognized without.
Fair enough.
Shave this thing.
Fair enough.
We do have something cool, though. Trading cards.
Mm-hmm.
The boys over at the Eskimo Empire podcast, shout out to Andrew and Mike, put together a really cool promotion. We've got Podski Wee Wee trading cards. We've got individual cards of the both of us. We got team cards of the two of us together. We will be handing out some packs during the Grey Cup Festival, so if you do see us, and I include myself in this, as much as I hate saying this, come say hi. If you want a pack of cards, I'll hand you a pack of cards. If you want an autograph, Mike, have you been working on your
Ciggy? I'm worried.
Ah, he's going to be illegible.
I don't – my G's look like D's in cursive. I got to find out. This is how uneducated I am. I have to find out what the G actually looks like.
The G? Oh, I can show you. I remember what the G looks like. Okay, cool. We'll talk after we're done. But yeah, come find us. Come talk ball. Come call me an a-hole if you want. Call me a slapdick if it makes you feel any better. But yeah, if you want a pack of cards, come find us and we'll hand them out. It's a really cool thing that those guys did. And
yes, very cool.
It's been a long time since I've had a trading card of myself. I think I was 15 when
You've had one?
Yeah, when I played sports as a kid. Oh, you didn't have them? Yeah, I got baseball cards. I got basketball cards.
This is a first for me.
I got a football card. I actually had one. My football card, my grandmother got on a sweater.
Oh, nice.
And used to wear it. Representing. Yeah.
She's proud.
She was very proud. My grandma loves me.
Yes, she does.
But yeah, so it's been 20 some odd years since I've had one. So this is kind of neat. So yeah, you find us, you see us. We'll be happy to give you some. And we'll hopefully have a good time. And we'll report back later in the week with how miserable I am for having to talk to people and how happy you are to be a social butterfly.
Yeah. Well, we will be at the Maritime Party, the Atlantic Schooners Party, because we got tickets for that
and we'll
Friday.
We'll be at the Two and Out.
We'll be at the Two and Out.
And there may be a special thing. I don't want to reveal it right now because I don't know if it's officially happening.
Right.
But we all know about the pierogi eating challenge between Zach Evans and our boy Trav on the Two and Out podcast. There could be a secondary challenge that I may have, if you follow me on Twitter, have instigated last night while Mike was at work and I was bored sitting in his apartment by myself.
With the blaring heat. That's another story.
It is so hot in here. It's incredible. Don't worry, we're not doing this in the nude. Are we?
Ooh.
Hashtag Rod Black. But yeah, so we're going to the schooner party. I'm sure we're going to hit up. I think we're hitting up the Tie Cats pub crawl.
Yeah, we'll be there.
We're going to do a bunch of other stuff throughout the week. We're going to have cards, so come find us. Come to the Two and Out show. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Pierogi challenge, and then you can follow us to a 7-Eleven for a potential Slurpee challenge afterwards. That I can't believe. Is this what Grey Cup's like? Like
Slurpees and pierogies?
Slurpees and pierogies and hanging out with players.
This is a new thing.
This is a new thing. Yeah. So I'm breaking ground. Maybe I should come every year.
You should. Apparently, I want to.
I'm a groundbreaker.
Yes.
I mean, next year is in Calgary. I could always come here and then we could go up together.
Yeah. We could just, it's only a 3-hour drive or something.
And the year after is going to be in Hamilton. I mean.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be at the next three. Maybe. Possibly.
I mean, it all depends on how this week goes for me. If I don't...
You have a miserable time.
I'm going to be in Calgary. Yeah. But so far it's been... we haven't really done anything because it's only Wednesday morning. But so far it's been pretty fun. So to end this interminably long podcast, which we ramble at the end, let's put a pin in it here.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, we'll be back later in the week with a bonus show talking all things Grey Cup, including previewing the matchup between the Red Blacks and Stampeders and giving our prediction on who we think will win the game. Spoiler alert. Calgary. But for Podski Wee Wee this week, I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.